It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump reversed years of chilly relations with Egypt Monday, welcoming President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to the White House.
We agree on so many things. I just want to let everybody know, in case there was any doubt, that we are very much behind President el-Sisi. He's done a fantastic job in a very difficult situation. We are very much behind Egypt and the people of Egypt.
It was the first White House visit by an Egyptian leader since former President Barack Obama hosted Hosni Mubarak in 2009. Relations grew frosty after Egypt's military overthrew the country's first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi, in 2013. Middle East Institute scholar David Mack said while the two leaders have much in common, he's not sure how much aid Mr. Trump can get from Congress.
So under the circumstances, I think it was natural that this meeting would go well between the two of them. The real question is whether President Trump can deliver. And I'm afraid that there are going to be a lot of problems.
However, he said the two countries can forge closer ties in the fight against jihadism. Members of South Africa's ruling African National Congress huddled together Monday to discuss the fallout from last week's sacking of the finance minister by President Jacob Zuma. The political opposition also met separately. Democratic Alliance opposition leader Musi Mamani said the dismissal of Pravin Gordhan is the latest sign that Mr. Zuma has to go.
The rather reckless reshuffling that has taken place by President Jacob Zuma, and ultimately whose interest is in amassing personal wealth and weakening the state in a manner that seeks to steal from the people of South Africa and undermine the constitution of the republic.
Six opposition parties say they plan mass protests. This is VOA News. A blast in a train car in the Russian city St. Petersburg Monday killed 11, wounded dozens. The attack, according to Russia's Interfax news agency, was carried out by a suicide bomber with ties to radical Islamists. President Vladimir Putin, who visited the scene, said law enforcement authorities are trying to determine all the facts while others are caring for the families and victims. The blast caused international condemnation, including this from White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
The United States condemns this reprehensible attack and act of violence. Our thoughts and prayers are with the injured and with the Russian people as we extend our deepest condolence to the loved ones who have been killed and injured.
There has been no media claim of responsibility, but the attack is being treated as an act of terrorism. A general strike hit Kinshasa, capital of Democratic Republic of Congo, Monday, called by the opposition, following a breakdown in power-sharing talks with President Joseph Kabila's political allies. Last year, strikes turned violent, but Monday's job action appeared to be mostly peaceful, with stores and banks closed. In Syria, government airstrikes near Damascus killed at least 22 people with scores more wounded. The target was the rebel-held city of Douma. The army said it hit at the heart of insurgent positions in eastern Ghouta, killing scores of terrorists. The area has been besieged by government forces since 2013. At the UN, the U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley said she does not believe the Syrian people want President Bashar al-Assad as their leader.
But we continue to strongly condemn the actions of Assad and what he has done, and he continues to be directly on our radar.
The European Union and the UN will host a two-day conference beginning Tuesday in Brussels on Syria's future. Ecuadorian socialist presidential candidate Lenin Moreno Monday celebrated victory. Even his conservative challenger, Guillermo Lasso, demanded a recount. The paraplegic former vice president secured more than 51% of Sunday's runoff election to Lasso's 49%. Mr. Moreno's victory reverses a trend in the region toward right-of-center politics with victories in Brazil, Argentina, and Peru. In Colombia, the death toll now is 273 following Friday's flooding and mudslide. Rescuers continue the search for bodies after heavy rains caused three rivers to overflow their banks, causing an avalanche of mud and debris that hit the southern town of Mocoa. President Donald Trump Monday donated the first quarter salary of his salary to the National Park Service. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke said more than $70,000 will be used to improve the infrastructure of many of the nation's preserved battlefields. He said the Park Service, which preserves hundreds of national parks and monuments, is way behind in its deferred maintenance. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Botswana in the Southern Africa region was rocked last night by a 6.5 magnitude earthquake.
Around 8 o'clock in the evening, we were doing some meal preparation in the kitchen, and I was with my wife. And we just felt the tremors and the big noise and the loud shaking. And we wondered what it was.
Modise Mapayane is the National Director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, Botswana branch. Secessionist groups in Cameroon are blamed for arson attacks in the country. And South Sudan rebels say they are not too impressed with their leaders' meeting with Festus Mohai.
The two leaders discussed the peace process in the country, and President Mogae was demanding things that are not really logical.
Stephen Paul is the senior member of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. A new study says being overweight and obese raises the risk of dying. And this morning, a discussion with the Queen of Calypso Music on the making of her song, Pepper Soup in Liberia. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Botswana in the Southern Africa region was shaken last night by a 6.5 magnitude earthquake. The epicenter was said to be about 250 kilometers from Botswana's capital, Gaborone, and tremors were felt as far as the suburbs of Johannesburg in South Africa. Modise Mapayane is the National Director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, Botswana branch. He says people in the capital, Gaborone, have never felt such strong tremors.
Around 8 o'clock in the evening, we were doing some meal preparation in the kitchen, and I was with my wife. My son was just coming in from his work, and we just felt this tremors and the big noise and the loud shaking, and we wondered what it was. I thought because we lived very close to a railway line that maybe a train was passing by. But we had never felt that much noise from the train passing. So my wife was like, let's run out. And I was a bit, I wasn't too deterred because I never expected such a tremor in Gaborone that strong.
We know that earthquakes are deadly and they are very destructive. Have the authorities in your country been able to make any announcement in terms of the extent of damage?
Not yet. We try to listen to the news that at 9 to see if there has been any major damage in the country. They have not made any announcement that I'm aware of. I don't know, maybe on the radio, because I didn't listen to the radio, but on the television, they had not made any announcement of any major disruptions from the tremor. But this tremor we felt in Gaborone, the capital, was felt, I understand, quite across the country as far away as 1,000 kilometers in some distances.
Is there a history of earthquakes around the Southern African region, particularly Botswana, where you are?
Not to my knowledge. I'm a 64-year-old person, but we've felt some tremors, very, very light tremors in the past. But the one that we felt today was a little bit outside. Maybe for me, I think I wasn't expecting an earthquake. I kind of saved my fear because in other places and in other towns, people were running out of their houses wanting to go seek a refuge outside, and people ran out of their homes. I think this was a little bit stronger than we've had in the past.
It's too early to say Botswana is a mining country. Sometimes people say that there's instability in the earth because of mining activities, fracking here, we say. Could it be? Or maybe we might have to wait for authorities to say what is happening.
I can't say much. I hear in Johannesburg, where my cousin is, they too felt a tremor earlier on in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and later, at the same time that we are feeling it here, they felt it in Johannesburg. And we are about 300 and 400 kilometers away from Johannesburg. So it is something that is quite new. In Southern Africa, in Botswana in particular, we have never felt tremor this strong. But I pray that we will not hear any serious injuries or damages to people's homes and people's lives are in danger.
Some of the early reports we are getting is that the earthquake measure 6.8 on the Richter scale, which is a very, very strong earthquake.
Yes, I went to the internet and found that they were seeing 6.8 earthquake hits in Botswana. And they seem to say some place called, they have felt it stronger, about maybe 360 kilometers or so from Gaborone. I don't know. We'll have to listen to news tomorrow to see what part of the country felt the tremor strongest. As for me, you know, 6.8 seems to be a very destructive earthquake tremor. And in Gaborone, as I speak to you right now, we have not received any major damages except maybe loss of power in some locations around.
I guess what they are saying also is that perhaps the epic center of the earthquake took place in an area that is not heavily populated. Maybe somewhere in the desert, we don't know. Maybe by daybreak, people in Botswana should be able to know where the epic center was.
Correct. I suspect so. They use a name that is close to my home village called Mijabana. They say that probably was the epic center, but Mijabana is, like I say, 360 or 350 kilometers from Gaborone, where I stay. So we'll hear the news tomorrow morning. I didn't get in touch with anybody in that location as this happened in the night.
Thank you very much again. We are very happy, at least that no destruction so far in Botswana. So we're very happy about that. Thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome, James. Bye-bye.
Modisa Mapayane is the National Director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, Botswana branch. He was speaking with me from the capital, Gaborone. A member of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition says the group is not too impressed with discussions their leader held in Pretoria, South Africa, with the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, former Botswana President Festus Mohai. Mr. Mohai met with rebel leader Riek Machar last Friday and reportedly discussed President Salva Kiir's call for a unilateral ceasefire and a national dialogue. Stephen Power, secretary for the SPLAIO Foreign Relations Committee, says the rebels have never been the aggressors in South Sudan's current conflict. He says, if anything, it is President Kiir who must initiate a unilateral ceasefire.
The two leaders discussed the peace process in the country, and President Mogae was demanding things that are not really logical.
What are these things that he was demanding?
He was demanding the leadership of the SPLM-IO joining this Kiir's engineered national dialogue. The other thing is the unfair demand of a unilateral ceasefire, when he knows very well that we were chased out of Juba by the current regime, which actually violated the ceasefire from day one. The party that is now on the offensive should actually initiate that process because we are on the defensive.
So you're telling me that JMAC is asking SPLM-IO to join the national dialogue and to declare ceasefire. What other things did he ask your group to do?
These are the major things that they discuss with our chairman, that we should denounce violence. That is their wording, which is actually unfair wording because we have not initiated this violence. This violence was introduced in 2013 by Salva Kiir, reintroduced again by Salva Kiir in July 2016. And what we are telling them is actually to evaluate the peace process correctly. The JMAC has lost its credibility. It has done a terrible job actually doing the monitoring and evaluation for the provision of the agreement.
You sound like you are a victim here. You keep saying unfair, unfair. Why would you use the word unfair?
Because nothing is fair in this process. First of all, the international community pushed us to Juba to implement the agreement in 2016. And in no time, Salva Kiir was in public record telling the whole world that he would not really implement the agreement. And he said, and he's in public record, that these agreements can be violated because it is not Bible and it is not Quran al-Karim. True to his word, he initiated lynching of our cadres in the full view of the international community. He got away with it, including the rapes of the Americans.
But the fighting in Juba was between your forces and government forces. So how would you blame one party when it takes two to fight?
Well, we did not go to Juba to fight. Salva Kiir knew that, and the whole world knew that. We could not have gone to Juba with 1,370 to start a fight.
Stephen, there is famine in South Sudan, and the UN and others are saying this is a man-made. And they are saying the leaders of South Sudan, including your chairman, should do something to end this violence so that food is delivered to people who are hungry.
Actually, the correct wording has been very clear from the United Nations that this war has caused famine, and this war is killed war. So
they say it's man-made. They say the famine is man-made.
It is killed.
I did not see that.
I'm saying this. You are not saying it. I'm just telling you this. And the records are there. The international community is also
to be blamed. But why would you blame the government when you, your group, prevent aid workers from doing their work, personnel from a non-governmental organization were under your custody for some days?
Listen, this thing is not fair. And the statistic is also very clear on this. Who is actually obstructing the aid provision in the country? Self-accused government is even killing them. We have not killed even a single aid worker. The one that you said we have helped are not aid workers. It may be that they are caught in a, you know, in a war situation, but our records are very clean, and the international humanitarian community has that.
Stephen Powers, Secretary for the SPLAIO Foreign Relations Committee, he was speaking from our Washington studio with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 4th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Cameroon's government says secessionist groups in the English-speaking regions are behind arson attacks on public buildings and most recently a large market in the town of Limbe. The destruction is prompting renewed calls for dialogue to end the five-month-old strike in the English-speaking areas. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Limbe, Cameroon.
The fire at Limbe Market burned for 4 hours Saturday. 50 shops were destroyed. The governor of the Southwest region, Bernard Okalia Bilai, said police arrested a suspect believed to belong to a secessionist group.
The suspect has already denounced many of his accomplices. And those who are in a way or another linked to this act of terrorism, we want to call the population of the Southwest back to peace. And I want to reassure the population of Limbe, the administration is there with the forces of law to protect them.
The fire at Limbe Market points to the dangers and the cost of the deepening impasse in Cameroon's two English-speaking zones. Lawyers and teachers in those areas, the Northwest and the Southwest, have been on strike since November. Most schools in the affected zones remain closed and business is paralyzed. The strikers are demanding reforms to counter what they say is the overwhelming use of French in the bilingual country. But while some strikers are demanding a return to federalism, other activists are calling for total independence for the English-speaking zones, ratcheting up tensions and violence. Several schools, private residences, police stations, administrative buildings have been burned. No one has claimed responsibility. Lawmaker Eno Tanjong from the Southwest region addressed his fellow senators on March 13.
I would like to point out and castigate the arson that ravaged the Faculty of Medicine of the University in Bamenda and the destruction of the administrative block of the government high school, Akwaya.
Visiting Bamenda in the northwest 2 weeks ago, Cameroon's prime minister called the destruction an attempt to exert pressure on the government. In response, the government has cut internet to affected zones and made arrests. That includes three community leaders charged in relation to the violent unrest in December. If convicted, they could face the death penalty, according to Cameroon's 2014 anti-terrorism law. Negotiations to end the strike fell apart when the state refused the strikers' demand to release everyone currently detained. Lawmaker Joseph Banadzam of the Opposition Social Democratic Front is calling for compromise.
Government and the strikers should come back to the negotiating table. And I think one of the conditions which they are requesting is the release of those who are negotiating with government who have been caught and brought to Yaounde.
Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Limbe, Cameroon.
We all know that losing weight and maintaining it is good for your health. But what about people who are overweight? Many studies have suggested a little bit of extra weight might be good for your health. But not so fast, say the authors of a new study who investigated the health outcomes of overweight individuals over a period of time. Viewer's Jessica Berman reports.
There's a paradox that's been seen in many studies of weight, that being a little overweight is not necessarily a bad thing. The research has concluded that it may actually prolong life in some ways, or at least not shorten it. But that's not the conclusion of a 16-year study of 225,000 people that assessed their weight in three prospective studies in terms of body mass index. The participants' health outcomes were then followed for a dozen years. The study, published in the journal Annals of Internal Medicine, found an increased risk of death among obese or overweight people compared to people who maintain their normal weight. The finding contradicts earlier research, including a large study by the National Center for Health Statistics at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That 2013 study found that being a little overweight was optimal for reducing one's risk of dying. The key to good health, according to the authors of the new study, is losing weight if one is carrying around extra kilos and maintaining the lower weight over a period of time. But there's a cautionary note. The reasons for weight loss in some cases may not be appreciated by healthcare providers. Andrew Stokes is a professor in the Department of Global Health at Boston University's School of Public Health and Development and senior author of the study.
People on the pathway to dying often develop illnesses that make them lose weight. So some people in the normal weight range are there not because of they're in good health, but because they've developed a disease such as heart disease or cancer.
Stokes says most of the studies that have been done on weight and its relationship to health take a single weight measurement or snapshot, as well as blood work that looks for things such as elevated cholesterol levels. Participants are then followed up periodically to see how they are doing, and many in the snapshot scenario are just fine. He worries that these studies, which show that being overweight may actually be good for your health, offer a dangerous message that trickles down to the public at large.
It's a message that could potentially create apathy towards weight loss and maintaining a healthy weight. So one implication of this study is that even a bit of excess weight can be harmful, and that it's really important to prevent weight gain and to maintain a stable, healthy weight across the life course.
Stokes notes that more than one quarter of the world's population is overweight, a problem that's emerging in low and middle income countries due to the availability of sugary drinks and processed food. These foods can lead to chronic health problems like diabetes. So says Stokes, people should not be confused that becoming overweight due to these indulgences is a prescription for good health in the long run. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Her name is Calypso Rose from the Caribbean nation of Trinidad and Tobago, and she has been the queen of calypso music for 40 years. But Rose has a special connection to Africa, especially Liberia. In 1986, she received the title of Ambassador at Large of Liberia with the release of her song Pepper Soup, and for her efforts to support Liberia's improvement. At 77 years old, Rose is still making music and would like to visit Liberia sometime this year. But first, she explains to me the story behind the making of pepper soup in Liberia.
Well, the first time I had a pepper soup was a lady by the name of Miss Menza. She invited me to her home and prepared this lovely dish for me. And the dish was tasting, oh my God, it was tasting so great. So I asked her what is in this dish. And then she gave me everything that was in. they put Booney inside. And at that time, the late Mr. Samuel Doe was alive. As you know, Mr. Samuel Doe even sent me a Christmas card, which I still have it here in his honor. And then Miss Menzies said, okay, we're going to take you to Liberia. So I wrote the calypso here and have it recorded here in New York. And when we hit Liberia, oh my God. If you go to Liberia and you want to stay in Africa, drink pepper soup.
Drink pepper soup.
Yes, oh my God. Drink pepper soup, man. Yes. Miss Menzo have invited me many, many times back to Liberia. But I am so busy at the Christmas time and New Year's time. And I've been trying to locate and I cannot add a number, but the number has been disconnected. I don't know if she's here in New York or if she's in Liberia. So if you could try your best to get Miss Philomena Menza's number, I will appreciate it. And I would like to go to Liberia sometime in December 2017.
Now, talking about Samuel Doe, that during that time you made the record.
Yes.
Now,
yeah.
Have you met Liberia's president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who happens to also be a woman?
I have never met her, but I called several times to congratulate her. Every time she went, I called and gave her congratulations. But I would love to Liberia before 2018.
So you would like to go there to meet President Sirleaf before she leaves office? Because this year, 2017, is an election. And she leaves office probably by January 2018. So you'd like to meet her before?
Yes, I would love to meet her before.
You know, I saw a video clipping of you singing Pepper Soup and dancing with some Liberian women.
Yeah.
You have the correct move when it comes to doing the Liberian dance.
I love the Liberian dance. Oh my God, that boom, see, always moving and the foot always moving. Liberia is just like Tobago, you know, the little 116 square mile I came from, you know. And the people are very loving and warm in Liberia. Very, very loving and warm. Very nice.
Calypso Rose, the queen of Calypso, thank you very much again for this opportunity to get to speak with you. Thank you.
You are so welcome. And God bless Liberia. God bless Trinidad and Tobago and the whole of the Caribbean nation. God bless you. You got to stay.
That's it for this Tuesday, April 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butter in Washington, wishing you a lovely day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.